Good evening. This is the October meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. Welcome to, we have some audience tonight, and hopefully audience at home. I'll do the roll call, and I ask everyone to go around and identify themselves.
Noah Smuckler.
Roger Young.
Dan Glassman.
Barry Dorfman.
Bill Olson.
And staff, if you welcome yourselves.
Bill Boucher.
Dylan Wade.
Janine Burlingame.
Thank you.
We do have an audience, don't we?
Okay, we'll now have a moment of silence. This has been our custom. To the acceptance of the agenda. Are there any?
I move we accept it.
Any changes? Any objections to the agenda?
No.
Then it's accepted unanimously. And announcements, Bill? Do you have any?
No.
And then Roger has one.
Yes, please. Thank you. I just want to give you a brief update on the urban forest management plan. Thanks to the help of a few volunteers, including Jane's husband, Tom, Noah, myself, and other citizens at large, we now have a completed city tree map update. And quite a few trees have been removed. Fortunately, some have been replanted, but not enough. We are still in need of trees. Some are dying and due to lack of maintenance. But anyway, I just thought we'd update you, let you know where we are in regards to that. And I do have the completed tree maps. There's quite a lot of pages. It's very large. I'm not sure what to do with them.
Did want to ask, where do they reside, the completed tree maps?
Right now, they're in the closet in my guest bedroom.
Oh, okay. Will they at some point get at a city place?
Well, I don't know what to do. This is a PWEB copy.
Oh,
it belongs to PWEB.
So the city has a copy.
The city has a copy, but not updated by us. I'm not quite sure what to do with that. Maybe staff can help me out. But we took it upon ourselves to do this, and I would say it's about 98% accurate. I'm taking an uneducated guess.
Maybe during the director's report, there'll be some item we can find out how to transfer the information.
Okay. Thank you. And I have some other on that same topic, some other discussion, but I'll wait to a more proper agenda time. Thank you.
Noah? And I neglected doing roll call to announce that Jane Weinsbeck is one of our members, was not able to make the meeting tonight. She is communicated with staff and also with me. I forgot to turn on my mic, but Jane Weinsbeck, our sixth member, was not able to make the meeting tonight. However, we still do have a quorum. And now we'll move to written communications.
Mr. Chair, I put a couple items on the table for you this evening. One is the Association of California Water Agencies fact sheet regarding California's water, a crisis we can't ignore. I think that's something that will fit into the urban water management plan discussion at the next meeting. And also a copy of the the Atascadero Mutual Water District does a water rate survey of the Central Coast communities. It just came in this week, so I made you a copy of that. It shows in a graphic and in written form what the rates are for all but most of the communities in our area.
Thank you. And we may come back to those when we get...
Can I say something here? On this water crisis, what's happened to the peripheral canal? That was part of the plan 50 years ago. And, you know, every once in a while I've heard something about it, but now it's really desperate. It seems if we, that would keep the water from being mixed with the Delta water in the first place, which would be, makes sense.
Well, that the peripheral canal, as you said, has been a subject of discussion and proposal for 50 years. It's recently been discussed a little bit. I don't know how far it goes with the condition of the overall levee system. I think that's been kind of the focus of a lot of the concern these days is the documented problems with the levee system. I haven't heard that the building a new canal around the periphery of the Delta has really come out as a viable alternative at this point.
And I think that may end up being further discussed when we do talk about the urban water management plan. Are there any other announcements?
I have a question, if I may, of staff on...
I mean, communication, excuse me.
On the Central Coast comparable cost of water, if I may ask, Bill.
For clarification.
For clarification, thank you. I don't understand, so I was wondering. Morro Bay is obviously the highest. We pay the most for water in our county, but what is this $146.54 figure based on, and how was that arrived?
Well, strangely enough, that what they've done is they've compared the rates paid, the residential rates paid in the various communities based upon what the average residential water use is in Atascadero. In Atascadero, the average monthly residential use is 25 billing units. 25. Whoa. Which is indicative of larger parcels and different temperatures, clearly, where our average residential consumption is in the area of 4 billing units. So if you were using 25 billing units a month, you would be paying $146.54. Or if you're in Atascadero, you'd be at $39.40.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is public comment, and then we will follow that with a planned public presentation. Are there any public comments unrelated to the Bayside Living Guide presentation? Welcome. And we do an approximate 3 minutes. We want people to finish their thoughts.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Dorfman.
Identify yourself.
My name is Marla Jo Bouton, and I'm a resident of North Morro Bay. Do you have an overhead there?
BGP video does.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to just put this book up here. And since Mr. Olson started out asking about the peripheral canal in California and what's going on with our water, by this time we are becoming all aware that we are in severe drought, and it is a national problem and a global problem. My studies of this have been international and national, and I worked with the Pew Foundation on oceans and what have you. Anyway, this is a compilation of several communities, Stockton being one of them, and a kind of a biography of what each town has gone through in sagas with sewer and water. And Los Osos would be a fine subject for this book, too, if they do a second one. There's a PBS special on TV that broadcasts a documentary on this also. But basically what it's getting into is it's come to the time when internationally we're coming to the question of, is water a human right or is it a commodity? That's the question. And with more privatization of water companies and polluting of groundwater because of deferred maintenance or not following EPA standards and what have you, we also have a severe groundwater problem that's occurring here. So I and two other citizens in Morro Bay took a look at the videotaped lines of the sewer connections here in Morro Bay, and we prepared three reports so far. One was just the damaged lines. The other one is the wastewater treatment plant joint powers agreement. And for those of you who don't know, Morro Bay and Cayucas are in a joint powers agreement, and basically Cayucas collects their raw sewage and then ships it through town, our Morro Bay, and to our wastewater treatment plant for treatment. I also believe that the state parks, we should be in a joint powers agreement of some sort with state parks. Any entities that are coming into our wastewater treatment plant, I believe that we should have some sort of a pollution authority. The state has now set up this the sanitary sewer maintenance program, which was actually written into law in 2004, and we're getting around to indulging in that now. Anyway, I'm very, very happy that the city council has decided to have you involved in the process, and it's extremely important to have citizens involved in this, so thank you.
Richard Sadowski, citizen, North Morro Bay. I would like to also thank this board for giving us the opportunity to speak on what we consider a public health and safety emergency issue with regards to our wastewater collection and conveyance system. Within these three reports that we had generated, in addition to that, I would like to take this opportunity to tell this board a little bit about myself and my qualifications to be able to, analyze a system like this. I'm a mechanical engineer by profession, fluid dynamics test ops, which is a test ops engineer is works with the trades out in the field. And basically my experience go from building launch pads at Vandenberg Air Force Base to building custom homes like in Ragged Point, Mildred Ramey's home. I was in charge of that one. And I also worked at Cayuga Sanitary District between February 2003 and November 8th, 2004. And while working there, I achieved a grade 4 wastewater collection system operator certificate. And during that time, I was fortunate enough to also work with a fellow journeyman plumber, Mr. Vince Navoa, who's there in the audience right now to answer any technical questions that might arise with regards to future discussions that we're about to have with regards to the condition of our collection and conveyance system. So thank you again for bringing this matter to the attention of the public.
Is there any other public comment? No. Because it sounds like in part you were germane to the, at least the last part, the when we'll discuss the sewer. But I think we had to have a planned presentation of public information on the Bayside Living Guide, and Noah will give the introduction.
Thank you, Barry. With discussion amongst our board regarding the urban forest management plan and challenges that we're having with our water supply and the need for increased conservation measures, and we've talked quite a bit about things that we can do within the city and the city properties, but an important component to this is also what individuals can do on their home properties and within the community that can have a big effect, especially if its actions are taken on a community-wide basis. So fortunately, within our community, we have an organization called the Morro Bay National Estuary Program And today we have a representative named Cheryl Lisinski, who has played a key part in their development of what is called the Bayside Living Guide, which is available at their offices and also at the city offices of Morro Bay. So tonight, at our behest, Cheryl will be presenting on the components of the Bayside Living Guide that have to do with bay-friendly landscaping, which is something that we can all do to help enhance our urban forest and reduce our water needs. So thanks again, Sharon. And
could you just repeat again where that's available?
Yes, these are available at the Morro Bay National Estuary Program's office, which Cheryl can give the address, and also in the City of Morro Bay's Planning Department and City Hall, and as well as on the web, but I'm sure Cheryl will cover that. And I guess I'll start by handing a couple of these out. And
well, I have one and I've seen it. It's very good, so I'll ask again later where they can people can get it, because it is so helpful, as I'm sure we'll find out.
Anyone else?
All right. Thanks for the great introduction, Noah. As he mentioned, my name is Cheryl Lisinski, and I work here in Morro Bay at a nonprofit called the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. As you might be able to guess, we work to protect and preserve the Morro Bay Estuary and its watershed. And exactly as Noah said, I'm going to chat with you maybe about 10 minutes or so, focused on Bayside Living Guide, and more specifically, bay-friendly landscaping. See if we can get the overhead projector working properly. So the Bayside Living Guide is kind of a magazine-type quality public education piece that the Estuary Program came out with about a year ago. It covers a lot of different topics related to how Los Osos and Morro Bay residents can help to protect the health of the Morro Bay Estuary. And it covers things such as what you can do in your home. Go ahead and get this forwarded in the right spot. It's just not working. Okay, I can... Okay, fabulous. Okay, so we're talking about the Bayside Living Guide, a public education piece that the Estuary Program has put out. It covers topics related to what folks can do in their home, in their garden, what they can do related to their automobile, and also with their pets, all these things having to do with how they can protect the health of the estuary. But tonight I'm going to be focusing on landscaping choices and how landscaping choices can do a couple of different things for us. It can help us conserve water resources, which Noah has indicated is something that is an important conversation going on with this board. How landscaping choices can help reduce concentrations of pollution and runoff that flows directly into Morro Bay. And lastly, how landscaping choices can actually help create habitat for native fauna. And before I get rolling, I wanted to show a couple of gorgeous photos of some landscapes that I would consider to be bay-friendly. Obviously, we put time and money into landscaping around our home for the aesthetics. It's enjoyable, and I wanted to just point out that all of these tips and things that I'll be providing with you tonight are not in conflict with those needs to have an aesthetically attractive landscape. Okay, so starting with water conservation. I'm sure that there are numbers all over the board, but I've found consistently through research that up to a third of a household's water can be used typically on their gardens and lawns. To me, that is a huge waste. There's a lot of time and energy, literally energy, that goes into purifying our water for human consumption. And to have up to a third of it be used on yards and landscapes and primarily lawns is something that I think that we can change and really start to reduce the water conservation or water resource challenges that we face. So one of the first and really the easiest things that we can do is to consider drought-tolerant plants. Generally, these plants will be California natives and also Mediterranean-type plants. And again, I want to underscore that there's a wide variety of plants that fit this description. You don't necessarily need to think of a cactus or some harsh xeriscaping. Lots of different types of plants fit the bill when you talk about drought tolerance. A few resources for the folks at home. Sunset Magazine actually does a fabulous job of pointing out drought-tolerant plants. And locally, the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden is a fabulous resource. They not only have a great website at slobg.org, but they have a great demonstration garden at the El Choro Regional Park across from Cuesta Park. So you can check out some drought-tolerant plants there and see what might fit with your tastes. Reducing the size of lawns is an obvious choice. Lawns are very thirsty, both in terms of the need for nutrients or fertilizers, and more specifically water conservation, which I'm talking about at this point. And I would like to urge people to consider the possibility that they could reduce the size of their lawn or possibly get rid of it entirely. And, of course, it definitely depends on what your lifestyle is, if you have children, if you have dogs. But even reducing the size of your lawn by 50% could greatly reduce your water consumption and really provide that high-quality drinking water to people and residents in our community. And then lastly, a very simple solution for folks that just can't think about letting go of some of their current landscaping. It sounds simple, but if people really just mulch the bare soil in their yard, that in and of itself would help to conserve water, keep more moisture in that soil instead of having it evaporate up into the air.
Would you explain what you mean by mulch bare soil?
Sure. Mulch, one of the most typical mulches would be to put down wood chips. That's one of the easiest and least expensive. Thank you. All right, so kind of moving past water conservation. Obviously, I could go on and on chatting with you about water conservation tips, and that's really, I want to just touch on a few things and point out to folks that there's much more information in the Bayside Living Guide, and later I will touch on where people can find that free guide. So kind of shifting gears a little bit to talk about something called urban runoff. Now, this is the concept that what we do on land has a big impact on our natural waterways. And for us locally, that primary natural waterway, of course, would be the Morro Bay Estuary. So, for example, every time it rains, of course, rain falls all over our town. And that rain, every time, washes really a cocktail of oil, pesticides, herbicides, anything that water touches. It could possibly dissolve and bring with it or wash with it into the bay. And this cocktail of pollutants definitely has a negative impact on wildlife and can impact public health as well. And I want to point out specifically here that liquids and anything entering a storm drain, it does not go to the wastewater treatment plant. It just would not be feasible for all of our rainwater to be treated. So anything that goes into the storm drain system basically drains into Morro Bay. And that is a natural process. That's where that rainwater would be going anyways. The only thing that's different is when you have a storm drain system, that stormwater is not filtering through the soil. So there's no natural treatment going on. Natural treatment, for instance, could remove some of the nutrients or fertilizers from runoff. But when a storm drain is utilized to minimize flooding, which is extremely important, that stormwater is just shipped directly to the bay. So one thing that the city has teamed up with the National Estuary Program on is to actually apply a decal next to all the storm drains, and that's shown on the slide there where it says dump no waste, drains to bay. It's a great partnership. All of our storm drains now in the city are marked so that folks at minimum will not be dumping pollutants and such directly into that storm drain. So now that I have that out of the way, just to get everybody on the same page, I wanted to touch on two different types of pollutants. One is fertilizer. The issue with fertilizer is that it's great for our plants. If it gets washed off our lawn, for instance, and into the bay during a rainstorm, there are some pretty negative things that occur. The end result normally is dissolved oxygen levels are reduced in the bay. Basically, there are a lot of flora. Think of a fish. You need oxygen, and dissolved oxygen levels in the bay are going to drop. More technically, what happens is fertilizers are nutrients. Consider those vitamins for plants. When nutrients get washed into the bay in excess, the first plants that grab a hold of those super vitamins, if you will, tend to be algae. And I'm sure that from time to time you've heard about algal blooms. They're not pleasant to look at, and they can get pretty stinky once the algae starts to decay. What contributes to large algal blooms tends to be nutrients from, a lot of times, folks like you and I trying to fertilize our garden. So generally what I would say is the first thing you need to do is test your soil. Make sure you even need fertilizer. It's very likely that your soil has sufficient levels of phosphates and nitrogen and such, and you don't need to spend your money or your time fertilizing your plants. If you do find out that you have a deficiency in your soil, select something called slow-release products, and these are going to tend to be non-synthetic types of fertilizers, things like bone meal, fish emulsion, and compost. All of those types of products are going to be superior because, let's say you go ahead and you fertilize, and 3 days later, there's a rainstorm that you didn't know was going to occur. these slow-release types of products are not going to release a high amount of nutrients and such, fertilizers, into that rainwater that just ends up into the bay, putting us into that spiral of algal blooms and dissolved oxygen levels dropping. So try a slow-release product. There are lots out there on the market. And then you'll see this theme come up again and again, but native, California native plants and Mediterranean-type plants are superior for gardening in our area. And in this case, I'm recommending them because they tend to not need fertilizers at all. So save yourself some time and money. Try a native plant. Okay, so the next type of runoff that I wanted to talk about is really a toxic type of runoff that would originate from pesticides and herbicides. You know, I definitely can relate to folks wanting to control pesticides or pests, and weeds in their garden. But there are some options that folks can consider, again, trying to keep the health of the estuary in mind when they're gardening. The first is to give natural and low toxicity products a try. It could be a little confusing to just have that general recommendation. However, we have a fabulous program going on in our area that's supported by the City of Morro Bay and the county and the National Estuary Program, and it's something called Our Water, Our World. And really all you need to know is get a glance at that little daisy there, and when you go to stores such as Miners, you're likely to see little shelf talkers, little pictures of that daisy on the shelf underneath products that are the least toxic. So to reverse that, the products that are the best for water quality, they're going to have the smallest impact. So I definitely appreciate the city's support on this program, and I hope that it continues on. Keep your eye open for that little daisy, and that will be an easy way for you to find some products that are going to be have the least bit of impact on the estuary. And then there's that same old thing there. Native and Mediterranean plants are very pest resistant naturally, so you can save yourself some trouble by selecting those. Okay, so kind of starting to wind down here. The last kind of topic that I wanted to touch on that really just has to do with the environment in the greater good is that using native plants can help create habitat in your garden. It not only provides shelter for native birds and butterflies, but also food sources that the local fauna can utilize. And one thing to keep in mind is that obviously, you know, the place where your home sits and my home sits used to be native habitat. It may have been 20 years ago, it may have been 100 years ago, but it used to be native habitat there. And so by selecting a few native plants, and really all it needs to be is a few. I'm not necessarily saying you have to pull out your whole yard and start over. But if you put in a few native plants, you definitely will attract some local native birds and butterflies to your garden to enjoy, provide them a home and some food. Okay, so just one kind of wrap-up slide. Bay-friendly gardening, then, it's not just good for the estuary. It saves money. It helps us conserve water, which is a huge issue in our community. It saves money for us as individuals and creates gardens full of birds and butterflies, native fauna, reduces water pollution, and keeps the estuary healthy, of course. And really the big question, of course, is, well, where can you get one of these fabulous guides? So if you click one more. These guides are absolutely free. We want to get them out in the community. So we have guides at the Estuary Program office, which is on the Embarcadero at Marina Street. We're in the Marina Square building upstairs, kind of next to Windows on the Water and across from Harada's, if you like sushi. So you can come in and pick one up at no charge. You can call our office, and we'd be happy to mail one to you. And you also, as Noah, I think, mentioned, you can actually download this from our website. I would really recommend getting a color copy for free in person. But if you want to save the paper and such, you can download it. I also try to keep these stocked at the local library, and they've been a fabulous supporter of the Bayside Guide. And then, as Noah mentioned, the city has also been fabulous, and at the Public Works building, we have copies there. So I certainly thank you for your time. I definitely understand that a lot of the board members here are probably aware of most of the topics in the presentation, but I think Noah and I definitely wanted to just bring it to your attention that the Estuary Program is doing as much as we can to educate the public on these topics, and that we have a lot in common related to our goals. So if anybody has questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you very much for a very cohesive presentation. Just a sort of process question.
Sure.
On You mentioned specifically in relation to the DAISY sticker program.
Yes.
And city support of that.
Yes.
Could you describe the nature of the city support?
Sure, definitely. I often see Rachel Grossman, who is a city planner, at there's a county meeting called Partners for Water Quality. And so that is the main meeting where Jill Falcone, the county stormwater coordinator, kind of updates us on that program. And then Rachel has been fabulous enough to take on kind of co-sponsoring with miners what goes on at their store. So she goes to the miner's store from time to time and checks to see how things are going. And you know, one specific event is, as you all know, miners just had a fabulous remodel. And so Rachel was really great. She went in after the remodel and kind of checked up to see if the Our Water, Our World shelf talkers were still there and such. So she has been fabulous in helping miners stay up on this program.
Any
just one question.
Yeah.
You mentioned soil testing for the nutrient level.
Right.
Who helps you with that? Is it someone like miners?
Right. Yeah, actually, you're right. I left that out. That's what I would suggest, is that it's very easy to go into any nursery or hardware store and pick up a soil test kit. They're very user-friendly and generally fairly inexpensive. Yeah, good point.
Actually, I did just want to add, I love your point about the mulch and the importance of that and the long-term fertilizing abilities of mulch, the water conservation values of mulch, mm-hmm. and the weed suppression values of mulch. And you can purchase mulch through landscape supply stores, but also our local tree companies are a great source for mulch. And especially if the tree has been trimmed in Morro Bay, you're getting a local resource that at one point was actually going into our landfills, but now it's become recognized as the resource that it is. So a place to find mulch at a very great price and probably delivered to your lawn is any of the tree companies locally by calling them, or the city often has piles, which I wanted to confirm are available for pickup, which I do sometimes. On Main Street near Radcliffe, in between Radcliffe and the Highway 1 on and off ramp there.
So and you're the one who's been
midnight runs, yeah. So just to confirm that those piles would be available for public pickup.
That's accurate. If you go give the location again.
It's on Main Street north of Radcliffe. There's that open area there adjacent to the on-off ramp.
And if there's a pile of mulching-looking stuff.
Yeah, please don't bring your loader over there. By a bucket here or two or a garbage can full is very nice. Let's try to share.
That's great.
Additionally, the wastewater treatment plant does provide compost. For those of you, that's actually a great organic fertilizer, making use of a waste product and turning it into something beneficial, and that's available at the wastewater treatment plant.
Could you relate whether the people need the phone in advance or if they just come during business hours and where they go?
It's best to call in. There's a little training the first time that you pick it up, and then once you've gone through that process, they go ahead and let you kind of come and get it during business hours.
It just be the wastewater treatment plant phone number that's in the book?
Correct.
Which is? 772-6274.
First of all, I applaud you. That's a wonderful report, and the information is extremely valuable, and it's the information that I'm concerned about. How can we get this information to the public more readily than watching a PWAB meeting, which I think on a scale of 1 to 10, we're about a 2.
You'd be surprised, Roger.
Viewership. Oh, I would be surprised. But is there something, for instance, in the water bill, if you could make a one-page or a one-paragraph statement that
sure.
this information, valuable to all of us and with consequences for our future, could be, if that's possible, also where you can pick up mulch? Education is the best, and an informed public means a much better environment, and I'm all in favor of trying to get the public as informed as possible. Okay. So any efforts that you, together with staff and
sure.
or separately, can do, I think would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a fabulous idea. If you guys have a bill insert, let me know what the specs are, and that sounds like a fabulous idea.
It doesn't have to be the whole thing, just that it's available and where it's available. Yeah.
I think that would increase the cost of the mailing just a little bit.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Great idea. Yeah.
Excellent report.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much for the time tonight. I appreciate it.
Again, thank you. It really was very, very good. The next item is the consent calendar, and we have the minutes and any changes in the minutes? I don't think so.
No.
Do I hear a motion to accept the minutes?
So
moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. There's one aspect of the minutes that wasn't worth changing at this point. It just didn't reflect that on the under the new business item where we passed a motion dealing with the urban forest management plan, suggesting to the board the reinstitution of adopt a tree program, the development of a landmark tree status program, direct staff to create, ask the board to the city council, to facilitate private citizen maintenance of city trees, including waiving the fee for encroachment permits, and instruct staff to be proactive in outreach to the public, and ask the council to give us any further direction beyond what's in the resolution to work on this. I was supposed to send a letter, which I will. I was away and didn't get back till after the minutes were finalized. But I will be sending that letter next week and to the board pointing out this resolution.
Could you also, if I may speak, include in that letter the update of our city tree map, please, and let the city council know that we are also looking for direction as to what to do with that map. Maybe they can inform staff at a future meeting. And thank you. And okay, I'll wait till future agenda items for the next thing.
Previous on the minutes or? Oh, thank you. Next item is the director's report, and as we've adopted the process, we receive the report and then ask staff to highlight rather than go through everything, just pick out what you want to point out, and then if there's any items that board members want pursued that aren't taken care of when you highlight things, we'll cover those.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the biggest thing that we've got during this period coming up is the state water maintenance shutdown. That starts November 4th, which is a Sunday, but so they'll stop producing water on the 4th, and water deliveries will actually stop to us on the will reduce on the 5th and run through the 18th. As we say, in other places, we've continued to monitor the groundwater wells. We've got a couple of wells that have been holding pretty good on the nitrate levels, so they'll be available for use. The desalter will be up and running, and we're also to receive about 300,000 gallons a day, about 200 gallons a minute from State Water Project storage from the Central Coast Water Authority. So we feel pretty good about making it through this shutdown. Really, that's the biggest thing that we've got coming around on the horizon that'll be between now and the next meeting. But projects going on as anticipated. Dylan can speak to Harbor Walk and the lift station projects, as well as the Main Street line. Janine's got her items. I did the only other item I really wanted to point out was on the Morro Bay Boulevard roundabout. I meet with our designers next week to discuss the findings of the peer review and to determine the scope and timing of the design modifications.
I would add to that just that we basically getting ready to award a fire station contract.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which location?
That's the Harbor Street fire station, the Apparatus Bay portion, the first phase of the site redevelopment. So hopefully the tents will be gone by the middle of the summer.
May I ask a question on the roundabouts, please? Thank you for the update. Curious, it says the peer review design, blah, blah, blah. Was there any funds expended in this?
Yes, there were funds expended.
And were they covered and how and by whom?
The grant funds provide for construction engineering expenditures. Now, and that's not to sidestep the issue because the redesign will have costs, and that's part of the scope of the modifications that's going to be discussed. Is how fast the firm will modify the plans and how they'll have to absorb the costs.
I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, Bill, but I'm asking as information for the public because this is a hot item out there for some of our citizens.
Right.
And most people don't know whether it's a go or not a go, but obviously city staff is continuing as if it were a go, and I'm curious as to how much money is being added to by these changes.
Well, that we do not know. We don't know what the modifications that are being looked at are fairly minor.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, when you're talking about changing surface features, everything down below changes as well.
Okay.
So it's not just the geometry of the curbs entering the facility, but it's also the landscaping plan, the underground utilities, and everything on down the line has to be changed as well.
Excuse me. Do we need to worry about the cost increase, or are the funds there? Or
well, we always worry about the costs. Mm-hmm. But there are funds within the existing grant to cover the contingencies that we anticipate.
Thank you very much. That answers the question.
Very pertinent point, Noah.
Yeah, actually, I just was hoping to get a timeline or expected timeline of what the nitrate analysis report would, the process for introducing that to the public and the council, and where it will go.
Right now we're waiting for the last of the laboratory results to come in and for the hydrogeologist to wrap up the final. When that comes to us, there'll probably be some punctuation errors that need to be corrected before the public review version is ready, and our first stop will be here.
Do you have an anticipated?
We're waiting for the lab, and I just can't say what sort of lab schedule they're looking at. A lot of the specialty items of analysis get shipped out of the area, and then we're kind of at the mercy of labs in the metropolitan Los Angeles area, and I don't know what that schedule is.
I do have two more, if I may. Are you through? Oh, I'm sorry. Corporate yard space needs assessment. We've got a design group RRM is preparing an analysis. What is this about? Where do the funds come from, and how much, please?
Good question. I'll try to field that one. In summary, what we're doing with that RRM, we've contracted with them to do an assessment of the space needs in the corporate yard. This has been driven by mainly three factors, and then there's some other minor factors that are also sort of pushing on it. But as far as we were concerned, as an idea whose time has come, the three driving factors that we think are sort of driving us to take a look at our city yard, that we think we're outgrowing it, is where we're at. And we have the wastewater treatment plant upgrade has sort of taken an eye, looked at part of the yard and said, hey, we might want to move into that yard. The desal plant has, if we're going to run it reliably, And frequently, we have a need in the future to add an iron, we have an iron removal system, but we'll need a decant facility so that we can make efficient use of that operation. And that would burn up some space. And then furthermore, the current collections staff is housed on the wastewater treatment plant site and are planning on moving off of there very quickly. Actually, their building's going to fall in on them any day kind of thing. And so we have these sort of three things that are coming together that everybody's eyeing the same piece of ground in the yard. And so we've hired RM to come in at a cost of about $45,000. And the costs for that study are being split three ways. They're being split currently between the two ways right now, and then hopefully three is how I'll word that. The sewer fund is paying for two-thirds of that study, and theoretically, I think an item will go next time to the JPA, so that we'll ask for the JPA to cover one-third of that study. That's the Joint Powers Agreement. That's Morobe Cayucas. That's the wastewater plant. So we're saying the wastewater plant, looking at the space that they want to use for their plant expansion, should fund a third of the study. The collection system, and it gets a little tricky in the way that we account for sewer, sort of the global umbrella, and has the plant and the collections in there. The collection system will pay for another third of that study, and then the last third of that will be borne by the water department.
Thank you very much. Excellent. Last question from me, and that is storm drains, flood control. I see where filters are being installed, and the annual voluntary stream cleaning is nearing completion. I am always curious every time I drive over Twin Bridges about that area. It seems to be growing and growing in vegetation, and whatever stream was there, I can't find it anymore. I'm curious, what are we doing, if anything, about that? Or can we do anything about it?
We've run into a dead end on at least two occasions since the construction.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Rob is here, Rob Livick is our city engineer, he'll hopefully be taking up the charge. I was unsuccessful once. Frank Cunningham was unsuccessful once. So hopefully Rob can spin some magic. Essentially, what
we need it.
What it boils down to is that the federal agencies don't want to issue us a permit to harvest any materials out of the creek area, and they've told us that if they did, it would be limited to the street right-of-way. So that would be maybe 10 feet upstream of the bridge and 10 feet downstream of the bridge, which would have marginal utility. But they have no interest whatsoever in allowing the creek channel to be cleared. We've also talked to them, if you've been down into the creek, when we built the bridge, there was 10 to 12 feet of clearance, and now I have to duck to get under. So just in a period of 10 years, it's filled 6 or 7 feet. So we would like to be able to harvest the sediment out of there as well, because it's silting up again and fairly rapidly.
Well, doesn't that also affect what eventually gets into the bay?
Yes,
the
it
estuary?
Does. Well, and I think that's one of the issues, and I don't want to drag this out, but the sediment is kind of dumping in the bridge area, which is bad for the bridge, but that's not so bad for the bay. Because if it's transported through the bridge, then it dumps in the bay. So it's a question of, while this sediment is coming down, of course, the ideal situation is to reduce the sediment loading. But while the sediment is being transported, and where do we want it to stop? And so I guess the decision has been made at levels above us that adjacent to the roadway and the bridge is a preferred alternative. But we haven't given up on the effort to try to get that cleared out.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And keep a good thought that Rob can be somewhat successful. Thank you, Bill.
I think then we're done with the director's report, except for one question I have returning to the nitrate analysis, just so I think the public is clear that waiting for this the isotope, the more sophisticated laboratory work, is not in lieu of ongoing testing as we're going through the shutdown.
Oh, no, 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 no.
No, I know it's not. Yeah. I just wanted that clear that this is related to a formal report by a consultant. There is an ongoing aggressive program by the city. You know, you could see how that might be misheard. The next item is old business, which is our agenda work plan. And if I could borrow that. If we could put one on the, Noah, could I ask you to put this on the overhead? I have a number of announcements or information related to this. First off will be a communication I did get, related under communications, that because of the Thanksgiving holiday occurring on our normally scheduled day of 11/21, does anyone have any objection to meeting the 14th? I think we do need a meeting in November, as we'll see. Is the 14th workable? It's a Wednesday. No, it's their proposal, the communication.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. They got, so is that okay with you, Bill?
Yeah,
so we'll act on that officially later, but it would have been difficult. Now, under the agenda work plan grid, we have for today, under PWAB items, the review of the Bayside Living Guide, which we've had, the agenda work plan, and the urban water management plan. That third item, I have to apologize for my part. There's, as we're getting this new process going, sometimes we don't shift gears smoothly, and it blew past us all that we didn't put this on the announced agenda. So we will not have it as a new business item tonight, despite the work that Noah had put in advance. And I propose that we definitely then have a meeting in November on the 14th. Did I? Let's see. On the 14th, I missed it. I knew about the change, missed it by one day. On the 14th, and we also have another the presentation plan for then on the recycling guide.
Is that definite?
That is not definite.
Well, that will leave tentative, but that would
let's
just
bump that.
Pardon?
Let's bump that.
Well, we will have time.
Okay.
I will ask if with the board's agreement that I will just work with Noah if he can contact the person about having the guide, because the new phone books are out.
Yeah.
The recycling guide reviewed, and we'll see if we can get them, otherwise it'll bump for another time. But that we definitely will have the urban water management plan, which was to have been to tonight, but through collective oversights, we didn't get it on the agenda, me too. And we very much, it's just for Brown Act reasons, and it's the only proper thing to do. If it's not on the agenda, the public doesn't know. That being said, staff, I understand from Janine that she does not expect to be ready with her item for November in any case.
Oh, I was not aware of that, but we do know that, and the reason that Rob has asked for the meeting to be moved forward is for a presentation from Caltrans on the their proposals for the Highway 1 enhancement plan, corridor enhancement plan thing.
Do you have a sense of how long that is?
A Caltrans presentation?
Yeah.
I'd say in the 15 to 20 minute range.
And it's the Caltrans Highway.
We'll have a better title for you. I've seen the exhibits. I haven't. It's a Highway 1 Corridor Enhancement Program, I think, something along those lines.
And I think
fencing, landscaping, intersection treatments, stuff like that.
I think that we probably would want to have that not as a for agenda purposes as a new business item, so we get to discuss it.
Yes.
Rather than just a simple presentation.
Correct.
For November.
Correct.
Okay. And then, to review what we've done so far is the recycling guide in the new phone book is tentative, and Noah and I as chair will work that out, whether it's another time. The urban water management plan will be November 14th, and we know the only staff item is the Caltrans Highway 1 Corridor Enhancement Program. And Janine Burlingame let me know this afternoon. She said she had not received some final information from the garbage company because they're waiting for some information they need to compile a rate survey that's part of theirs. And her timeline could even slip to January if it had to allow the 30 days notice before it would take effect in March. We need to work on a December meeting in so far as we would have any items. That's why I asked Janine Burlingame about if we didn't have December, because if we don't have an item and staff doesn't have an item, it has been our custom we won't have a meeting.
Looks like we have a pretty crowded meeting coming up in November.
No, November is fine.
Okay.
It's set. Uh-huh. We have the Caltrans and we have the Urban Water Management Plan. That'll work, and then we can talk in November. And if in advance, since he put the thought into it, and just ask Noah to give a minute or two of what he hopes to give to the Urban Water Management Plan discussion.
Okay. One thing we should mention is an item that was introduced to each of the board members is some information. It's a fact sheet from a group. It's called the California Association of Water Agencies.
What Bill passed out at the
beginning? Yes. And the title of this report is California's Water Crisis We Can't Ignore, which as was pointed out in public comment, it's actually a worldwide issue right now as far as water supply, and it seems especially appropriate for our board to include this information for review as we discuss our urban water management plan. The website, if anyone from the community is interested in looking at this piece of information, is www.calwatercrisis.org. That's calwatercrisis.org. And it lays out quite a bit of the information about where our state infrastructure is at as far as the state water project goes and our water supply issues. So I felt like that was going to be a component of our discussion. And then also I'm hoping we can work into more of a local snapshot about things that we could potentially adopt from the urban water management plan as far as conservation potential into the community and work on establishing a system for, namely, a gray water system permitting process potentially refining what we have available for the community as far as education and information about what they can do on a home level to conserve their water supply and maintain as local a water supply as possible. So those were some of the ideas that I had. And talking with Mr. Boucher, we've tentatively decided to discuss more about the potential for gray water discussion and ideas that we can find with that between now and the next meeting. And hopefully we'd have some more details about that also in the discussion as well. So
this sounds very sensible. I want to ask the urban water management plan, if someone wanted to peruse it before, where there's the extensive discussion at next meeting, where would they get that?
It actually is available on the city's website. I don't have the exact address memorized.
Morrow-bay.ca.us.
And
you click through to Public Works. You go to you go through Public Services Department to the Public Works link that gets you to the divisions, gets you to water, and it'll have the Urban Water Management Plan in the water section.
Is it in the library also?
Yeah, there's a copy in the library and copies. Well, I mean, we have them to look at. I can't really check them out because we have a finite quantity, but they're available at our office as well.
We want to agendize that as a new business and really not as a presentation but a hearing we're having, so that the public is invited to comment then when it appears on the agenda under new business. And so I wanted people to know where they could get that source document should they either want to listen in at home and just critique what we didn't get to, or come and participate.
Quickly for clarification on our agenda work plan grid, it says the 15th of November. So that would be
my error.
Okay, so it is the 14th.
And if the truth be known, it's a double error because I didn't know about the desire to change at that point. I just need to put my proper glasses on.
Isn't that how the world works?
Yeah.
At my age, I need a set to look at the computer and a set to read, and we'll stop there. I think we're done with the agenda work plan, and we'll move to new business now, the state of the sewer, and it's a presentation from when we have some documents with it by Mr. Boucher.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'll do just a little bit of an intro, and then Mr. Wade will provide the presentation itself. What we're hoping to do tonight is to present to the board and the public just some preliminary findings of the initial work that we've done to assess the condition of the system. As you may recall, the City Council adopted the revised rate structure late last fall that was implemented at the beginning of this year, which provided us the funding to start these tasks. Where we started with a dry winter was really not being able to identify areas of inflow and infiltration because of the dry winter, but rather we started our video inspections on the areas of the system that our collections people suspected had the worst problems. Not surprisingly, we found some pretty bad problems. But I do hesitate to say, since we are starting on the worst part, I hesitate to say that this is representative of what the remainder of the system looks like. Also, we've been looking at our lift stations. We found that the lift station at the Front Street parking lot, which is lift station number 2, which is our largest lift station, that's about 50 years old. It's located immediately proximate to the bay, so if there's a problem with that, it spills directly to the bay. Similar situation at lift station 3 at South Bay Boulevard and Quintana Road. of a problem with that. It goes straight into the estuary. So we're, as we said in the director's report, we're working on engineering plans as we speak to replace both of those lift stations. We're also in discussions with the Cayuga Sanitary District with regard to the replacement of the jointly owned trunk line along Main Street and Atascadero Road. That's been identified as a problem through the master plan and through the subsequent previous and subsequent videos. So having said that, I'm going to turn it over to Dylan. I'll kind of run the machine, but I was going to give you photocopies of the presentation as well in case you have trouble seeing the screen from whatever angle you may be. They're not cool color like that, but they are grayscale nonetheless. And having said that, Mr. Dylan, Wade.
Thank you, gentlemen, for the opportunity to kind of present this to you. We've been very busy, as Bill's talked about, in the collection system in the last year. We actually had a rate increase go into effect. We've hired an additional staff member, and we're starting to make some real progress on assessing the condition of our system, identifying what we think are the worst problems, and fixing those worst problems. So we're marching ahead fairly quickly. But as part of that process, we've gone through and we videoed, like Bill said, some of the worst of our system and taken a look to try to figure out what it is. I'm a little embarrassed tonight to be following Cheryl's program. She had beautiful slides, beautiful presentation. It's going to be a tough nut to follow with the subject I have at hand, but we'll do what we can. All right, so here's, I think I can get it from here, Bill, but if you'll stand by. Here's a diagram, very simply, of how our system works. And so if you start with this and you take your home or business, and hypothetically in this case it's somewhere along the Embarcadero, let's say. So your home or business dumps into a sewer line. It leaves your home, you flush it, away it goes down into this pipe. Well, where does it go from there? In the case of the state park actually does discharge into a line. That line then runs down along the Embarcadero, and that line runs by gravity and lands in lift station number 2. Bill talked a little bit about lift station number 2. Lift station number 2 basically picks that material up and then pumps it into a line that takes it to the wastewater treatment plant. It's treated, and then ultimately, at this point, that water winds up going into the ocean. So that's sort of a brief schematic of what happens. We have other parts to our town. We have the Morro Heights downtown. That largely flows by gravity into a pipe to lift station 2, is pumped to the wastewater treatment plant, treated, and then disposed of. North Morro Bay doesn't go through a lift station, most of it. It actually just runs by gravity into the wastewater treatment plant. There are significant portions along Highway 41, kind of the Radcliffe area, that also does the same thing. We have other areas that feed into some of the other lift stations. So the Cloister subdivision, the Beach subdivision, being very low-lying areas, actually, they pump, they go into lift station number 1, which pumps it into a common line that runs into the wastewater treatment plant where it's treated. And then the other area of town that we have is the Quintana South Bay area that's sort of on the other side of Black Mountain. And we have a lift station there that picks it up and pushes it into a line and it runs in the wastewater treatment plant. So very simply, what happens is that water all winds up at the wastewater treatment plant via the collection system. And I want to talk a little bit tonight about that collection system. So here's an interesting little slide. It's not totally complete. There's probably a couple miles of our system that aren't reflected on this graph. But for conversation purposes, it's pretty telling. If you look at the top two lines, this is when our system was built. And so we built our system largely in the 1920s and then in the 1950s. So things of that vintage, you know, the sewer systems aren't like wine. They don't get better with age. What we found is that over time things break down, things deteriorate. And so we have a large portion, the vast majority of our system, is really getting to the point where it needs some attention and it needs some maintenance or rehabilitation to keep it going for a little while longer. Think of it as your knee replacement or hip replacement surgery kind of thing. So there's our outline, and you go, okay, 200,000 of 270,000 was put in you know, before 1954, so it's well over 50 years old. So for our purposes, we use a 50-year life cycle for the pipes that are in the ground. You can argue life cycles. This is actually a fairly short life cycle as far as a lot of pipe materials are concerned. But what we found in our investigations is that in Morro Bay, the pipes don't end they don't reach the end of their life because they're wearing out. They get broken before they reach the end of their useful life for the most part. There are some ductile iron pipes that are tuberculating and different things like that. But for the most part, what happens is over time, things shift around, and then these pipes get stressed, and then they break. So here's what happens if you say, okay, well, after 50 years, we're going to replace every single pipe in the system. And this is a 50-year life cycle replacement. And so you go, well, we're behind schedule by a couple hundred thousand feet if that's the case. Good news is that most of our pipe is clay pipe, and in the good case scenario, it can go much longer than that. It's not unrealistic to get 100 years out of clay pipe if the soil doesn't move around it. So I'm not a preacher of doom and gloom. I think we need to take a realistic look. We've looked at large portions of the system. We have a lot still to look at. And what we're saying is, yeah, there's a large parts of our system are going to need some repairs. In some cases, those might be simple point repairs. They might be more complicated. But we're certainly getting to the point where we need to give it a little better attention than we have in the past. So here's common causes of defects in Morro Bay sewer system and some symptoms of its age. And I put some pictures up here. They're pictures of sewer pipes, and so they're not pretty flowers and insects and butterflies, but they are very indicative of what we found. So this is an example of a sewer pipe that's in very good condition. If you look at the pipe, you don't see really anything on the inside of that pipe. You don't see any big cracks or breaks. You don't really see leaks. So this is what an example of a 50-year-old pipe that's in relatively good condition looks like. And you notice that we're flowing at maybe 1/8 of the pipe full. Well, what happens is you have these different causes that can damage this pipe. Some of the common sort of major things are earth movement, man-made problems, deterioration, things like that. And I'll go into those in a little bit more detail.
Oh, you will.
Yes. So some common problems caused by earth movement. Everybody knows in California, sometimes the ground moves. We had a fairly large earthquake in this area not too long ago. And what we found in some of our sewer videos is that before that event, some things didn't look so bad, and they look a little worse after that earthquake. So certainly I think we have some spots where we're chasing earthquake damage. We have other spots in town where when it rains, the steep hillsides loosen up a little bit, and they're prone to creep along a little bit. And so what that does is it can cause different problems in your pipeline. One thing that it can cause is you can get a low spot, or what we call a belly or a sag, where one pipe is sort of lifted up, the downstream pipe lifts up a little bit, and then the flow can't get through there. Another thing that can happen in a brittle pipe material like clay pipe, which is what we largely have, as those two pipes try to move in relationship to each other, one of them can crack. So you basically start pulling those pipes or pushing them past together, and something's eventually going to break. So we've seen that we have some cracked joints. Another thing that can happen is the joints can get offset, where one pipe kind of rotates in relationship to another. This is a good picture of a fairly major offset joint. So your one pipe comes into the other pipe. The pipe that it flows into is dropped down, in this case, probably 1.5 inches or 2 inches below the host pipe. That creates a problem because the flow can't get all the way through there. You're effectively dealing with 80% of the pipe that you were before. And then all of that, but it's an opportunity at that open joint for either groundwater to seep in or potentially for sewage to seep out under certain conditions. So you can also get a detached lateral, which is where the host pipe moves, and then your service line coming from your house no longer is attached to the sewer pipe. And we had a case or two of where that's occurred in our system. And then also you can get structural damage where a pipe could potentially collapse. So if the earth movement's big enough, you could just literally crush a pipe and then you're not going to get any flow through there. There's also common man-made problems. People aren't always friendly to the collections workers. And I think most of the time they do that because they don't know what they're doing. I think a large part it's you flush it and forget it. And that's a great luxury, but there are people who get to deal with what you flush. And so one of the big things that we ask is just to be cognizant of what you're putting down the drain. There are certain things we don't want to see in there. One of the big things that we don't want to see there, we have what we call a FOG program, which is fats, oils, and grease. You know, the grease, when it's hot, flows just like water. But as soon as that cools off, what happens is it actually comes together and forms. It can totally block the pipe. So here's a picture of a line that after we had cleaned it. So we had gone through and actually jetted this line out already. And there's a big grease ball basically blocking a large portion of that pipe. Well, what happens when this pipe is flowing full, it's a weather event, is that that can constrict the flow such that it will back up, and it can back up into the business next door. It could back up into your neighbor's house. It could back up into your house. Other things that can happen is people sometimes put weird things down the pipe. You know, probably the worst thing would be a bowling ball. They can wind up in there. But we found all sorts of random items in there. So we want to keep, you know, the sewer pipes, you want to have the right things in there, keep them in there, and you don't want to get the wrong things in there. Other man-made problems is you can have leaking laterals where people haven't maintained or taken care of their lateral, and so the lateral is no longer working as intended. You can have construction defects. We don't live in a perfect world, and even a brand new gravity sewer system is designed to allow a certain amount of leakage. So what happens is, you know, it's not always built right in the first place. You can have design deficiencies where it wasn't maybe designed correctly and you don't catch it necessarily at the time. And then also you can have what we'd call right-of-way encroachments or different things like that, where somebody came along, and we have a few spots in Moore Bay where somebody's built a house on top of our sewer main. So you go, that makes it really tricky for us to get in there and do any kind of maintenance. Nobody likes you digging in their living room. Additionally, we have structural deterioration. So things can just break down in time, and we all know that. We've all had a car at some point, and you know that they just don't last forever. So things rust, they can crack, they can break, they can chip. You can have chemical attack. Sewer systems and the materials that convey can be very corrosive. You can get hydrogen sulfide attack, different things like that. You can have abrasion, actually, where you're sweeping sand along and you can wear away the pipe. And then you can also have crushing. So here's a good picture of a inside of a manhole looking up the ladder rungs and just how rusty and kind of corroded those get. Another problem you can have in sewer pipes is trees. And it commonly you hear people say that trees don't cause problems in sewers. That's not always true, but certainly trees are very opportunistic. And so what happens is as a tree root grows, it can actually cause a lot of the damages that earth movement can cause. You get a root running under that pipe, and then over time it lifts that pipe up and pulls it apart. Well, as that pipe starts to pull apart, as you have those offsets in the joints, what happens is the tree has found a great source of nutrients and water, which trees like to grow. And so you can get roots growing into the pipe. And in some cases, you can get fairly thick roots growing into the pipe. What that does then is that leaves you no room, basically, for flow. And so it can be a very huge problem. And I'd say in Morro Bay, tree roots growing in laterals and then into the main are probably the largest single cause of blockage that we have in our system. So this is the most common problem that we see, are the roots coming in into the offset joints and backing up flow. So to summarize, and this is a picture of a damaged pipe from improper lateral tying. So somebody took a hammer and just basically smashed the pipe all to pieces so that they could make their tie-in into the sewer pipe. We're really lucky that this didn't collapse. It would have cut off flow for everybody. And so if people aren't careful or if different things happen, the system may not function as intended. And so, you know, we're realistic in Morro Bay. We want to just sort of throw out there that we have this aging system. We have problems in our system. It's not in perfect, brand-new condition. And there are things that we need to do to sort of jump in there and fix it. So, like I said, I'm not a preacher of doom and gloom. So where do we go from here? And here are some of the things that we are working on in our department, in our division. We do routine inspection. So we're getting into there. We often open up the manholes. We inspect our lift stations daily. And then we're starting to do video inspection of our main street lines on a fairly regular basis. What that does is it lets us know sort of where our weak points are. and then we can get in there and try to fix the worst things worst. And that's what we're doing right now, is we're trying to fix those areas that are most potentially catastrophic if they fail first, and then we'll branch out and start fixing some of the other problems we know we have that aren't as severe if they fail. Another thing that we do is we do system maintenance, and this is something actually that Morro Bay does very well. The guys clean the pipes on less than a two-year rotation. So we're on a two-year rotation. So every pipe in the system is cleaned every 2 years or better. That's a very good industry standard, is somewhere between 3 to 5 years. So we're twice as frequent at cleaning as a lot of places are. And what that's done for us is it's let us get by with a system that maybe has some defects, but we're making our system that is, you know, not great work as well as possible. We have another program that we're sort of really getting into now, which is the INI reduction. The term INI is inflow and infiltration. What happens in storm events is some of the water does wind up in the sewer system. We actually see flows potentially as high as 4 times the normal flow during big rain events. So water finds its way into that system, and it does that any number of ways. It could be people tied the storm drain from their house into the sewer system. It can be it leaks in around manholes. It can come in through the groundwater, comes up. You have some cracks and things in your pipe, and the water flows in through there. So there's just any number of routes for it to get in there. And what we do is we're starting to go out as we assess the system. We're saying, okay, here's a spot where water can come in or come out, and we try to do some repairs to make sure that we have it tight a system as possible. Another thing that we've done is we've done some hydraulic modeling. We've done that largely as part of the master planning process, where we go through and say, okay, well, how much flow do we think should be in there? How much is in there? And where do we have a problem in capacity? Where do we think we could have an overflow? And that way we can try to upsize or fix those problems before they get too bad. We talked a little bit about our FOG program, which is our fats, oils, and grease. Just please don't flush grease down the drain. Put it in a paper cup and then let it solidify, throw it in the trash. Put it in a plastic bag, put it in the trash. There's ways to deal with that. Waste oil can be collected, so it just doesn't belong going down the drain. Another thing that we do is we do point repairs. We've done a number of those this year where we find something that's disturbing to us, and we get in there and we dig down and we just fix it because we think it's basically a big risk. And so anytime we see anything that we think is liable or prone to collapse or is of such a severe nature, a lot of times we'll just immediately fix those if we can. And then lastly, we have a capital improvements program where we're going through and systematically repairing and replacing and updating and repairing and making our system as whole as possible. And we do that in a systematic way. Those are a lot of times where our larger projects wind up. So what is our constraints then? And as we look at our capital improvements, here are some of the identified capital improvements. Right now, considering the two lift station replacements, the Main Street line, we're actively working on somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 million worth of repair work. Where we're at, though, is that our reserve fund is nowhere near $6 million. And so we have two constraints. They're really in Morro Bay. One of the constraints is time. It just takes time. Even if we had all the money in the world, we couldn't fix everything today. We can't just dig up the whole city and replace everything in an instant. Even if we had all the money in the world, it would take us 3 or 4 years at earliest to fix everything that we know is wrong. And then the other thing that we have is we do have funding constraints. You know, we're right now actively involved in projects that will vastly exceed our reserves. And so what we've done to sort of improve that situation and what we're going through right now is everybody, we're in the protest period for a proposed rate increase. And we're holding a hearing on November 13th here at the Vets Hall to actually pass a new rate. And what that rate will allow us to do, we base the rate on the rate that you need for the wastewater treatment plant upgrade. So the city's elected to upgrade their wastewater treatment plant, to upgrade it to tertiary, and we said, okay, here's the money that we need to do that. The timeline that we use is we're trying to implement that rate earlier than we would need to for just the wastewater treatment plant, and then use the funds that we collect in the interim to allow us to do a lot of the repairs in the collection system. So we're basically saying, here's the rate we're going to have to get to. Let's implement it early, get some money together so we can do all these things and make the major repairs to our collection system before we upgrade the plant. And then what that will allow us to do is that allow us to take a second look as we're going through the design of the plant and say, okay, here's really what we think we're designing around. Here's tighter numbers on our plant design. What it doesn't do, though, is we really couldn't implement the rate. We should have implemented the rate increase 10 years ago to have all the money that we think we need to repair the collection system. And so where we're at is that doesn't preclude us from having to get debt financing. We're going to have to get some debt financing. Fortunately for us, if we have the rate structure in place, then we'll borrow the funds from other city funds. So we'll basically take the money, the city will self-finance that debt, and then that gives us a really good rate. So we're basically getting the best rate that we think we can. The published schedule that is out there, I've had some questions on it. One of the biggest things is that there was a previously implemented annual escalator. So every year the sewer rate goes up incrementally to basically cover the cost of inflation. And that's reflected in there. We thought that was important so that people could understand exactly where we would land. And then the last question I've had about it is, how much can I use before I get hit with it? And what we do is we base your wastewater rate on the amount of water that you use. And so you can use up to 10 units of water in your home before you see any increase in your wastewater rate. So we give you a pretty large allotment on the wastewater side because we're not metering the wastewater directly. We're basically indirectly metering that, and so we've given you a larger allotment. On your water side, after three billing units, you start to see the rates go up. And that's what that chart showed earlier is if you use 25 like the average home in Atascadero does, your water bill here would be $150 approximately. And then one moment. And then the last thing is that if you're non-residential, there's a base rate that you pay. So if you only use one unit, then you pay this base rate. Or if not, we have sort of a two-tiered rate for non-residential. You pay the base rate or you pay your usage based by a multiplier, and you pay the higher of those two. So you're not getting out for less than the base rate. And then if you use a lot of water, you're going to pay a lot more than the base rate is how that works. So we think we have a pretty good rate structure. And then that was really all that I had kind of wanted to cover tonight. So I'll open it up to questions.
On that last, right there, the very last paragraph, 10 units. How many residents ever get beyond 10 units?
I don't think there's many. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I would say it's a very small percentage. The vast majority, our average usage in Morro Bay is about 4.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some, you know, big lots and different things that wind up using a little bit more than that. But I would say it's probably less than 10%.
Well, if you're using 10 as the base, isn't that sort of defeating trying to earn more money, acquire more funds to do the work that's necessary?
There's not enough people using. You have to have a little bit of, I guess the way that we looked at it is you can't say that all the water that goes into a home comes back into the sewer pipe. At the high end, maybe 80% of that would. But generally, that's not even the right ratio. It varies depending property to property. So we've sort of set that maybe a little bit high just to account for the fact that we don't directly meter your wastewater. We meter your water. And then we've given you a high usage. If we cut that in half, let's say, there wouldn't be significant earnings because there's such a small number of users that are above and beyond that.
Thank you. That explains it for me.
But everyone's rate will go up some.
Yes. The base rate is going to go up. What we're proposing for the rate is a 50% increase in July of 2008.
I don't want people to hear or see from that they think if they are below the base, there's no change.
That's a good point. Everybody's rate is going up across the board.
Yeah. In terms of, well, Noah, do you have?
I do have some comments, but I would like to hear what your the increase is what we're going to be over the course of time? You're just about to...
Yeah, I can run through. I didn't actually bring that. We're holding a hearing on that on November 13th at City Council. We haven't adopted that rate yet. The mailer's out there. The residential rate is going from somewhere around $20.60, where it sits right now. Your base rate is going up to, at the end of this whole thing, is going to be somewhere in the $40 range. So it's a fairly substantial increase, and that includes the one-time increase now, and then the annual escalator for 8 years on top of that.
Does that include the increase for the wastewater treatment?
Yes.
Or is that?
Yes. No, so that won't be an adder on to it. What we've tried to do is structure it such that we're going to the rate right now that we think we're going to need to be at for a very long period of time.
Which includes the wastewater treatment plant and the sewer pipe upgrade.
Correct. So we're killing two birds with one stone. We're
and
saying
that's going to be at roughly $40 a month?
Yes, for residential.
Plus the water?
Yes. That's correct.
Another question would be, as far as the continued video surveillance, is that going to be an ongoing process that the city's already committed to, or is that still up for debate?
That's a great question, and segues nicely into...
Could you repeat the question? I couldn't quit.
It was regarding the city's plan to continue with the video surveillance, which seems to have been effective at turning up problems.
Yeah, we've always... historically, we've done certain percentages and portions of the pipe. I don't think we've ever been at the point where we had a very systematic, we start on one street, work our way all the way through the city, and then come back to that street and start over again. We're not even at that point yet because we've been focused on, the guys in the field have a pretty good feel for where their problem areas are because they're very frequent at cleaning them. And so we focus on trying to, let's look at what we think is the worst now, and then we'll come back and start that systematic approach. What we're going to be doing over the course of the next 2 years through this venue, actually, through PWEB, is we're preparing a sanitary sewer master plan. And that has been a requirement of the state. They've said it's time now for everybody to do this. And it's sort of a series of best practices. One of those practices is the routine inspection of a video inspection of your system. Industry-wide, the average right now is somewhere between every 5 to 10 years to take a look at what you have. We, I would say, have done probably 6% of our system in the last year, and we're still working on that. We're fairly active at doing that right now, only because we're trying to make sure that we catch the worst of it before we get too far along. And so we're very actively pursuing the video inspection. We don't plan to stop that anytime soon.
Did you say 6 or 6?
6. So in the last year.
I understand, if I'm not mistaken, from a previous council meeting that there are funds available, there will be funds available for the whole system to eventually be videoed.
Yes. Yeah, the constraint on the video, we've had a couple of issues. One is there were certain areas where we think we have a lot of inflow and infiltration, what we call I&I. And the only way to really quantify that is to video it while you've had a big, heavy rainstorm. Unfortunately, we haven't had the big, heavy rainstorms recently that have allowed us to do that. So certain portions of the system we've actually held off on and said we're going to try to catch that when we have a big storm so we can go in and try to quantify inflow and infiltration. There are also constraints with just the crews in that when we do video a line, we generally clean the line first so that you can get the best possible look at the condition of the pipe. And then we always, or almost always, have the crew on standby in case we find something catastrophic or in case the inspection equipment gets stuck. Our crew is sort of there standing by it with them and looking at the video in real time.
What about the... I understand the need for doing the sewer pipes, but what about the pipe from the house to the sewer? The residential business pipes that are equally subjected to the same conditions, I would think.
That's a great question. One of the unique conditions that you have in the United States versus the rest of the world or most of the world is that in the United States, the homeowner, you or the business owner, owns that lateral. And so you own from your house all the way to the main line, and you are responsible for that. What we do is when we're video inspecting the main line, we stop at every lateral, we look up the lateral and see if we see any problems. Now that's very limited in scope. We can maybe see 3 or 4, 6, 8 feet at kind of the maximum of the lateral. If we see an observed problem in that lateral, then we have a mailer that we'll send out to the home property owner, business owner, and say, hey, we've observed a problem. You might want to get a plumber to come out and take a look at this before it gets any worse. It's pretty innocuous in tone. What we've also done is we're in the process of updating sort of our standard practices in the city and our city standard specifications. And we are going to require that any residence or business that adds new fixtures or does more than a 50% remodel do a video inspection of their lateral and give that to us. It's very important to us that the laterals be maintained. And really, it's best for everybody. You'd rather see the problem on a camera and then find out about it because you had a blockage.
That's an excellent concept. Is that going to be part of an ordinance so that it has legal backing to ensure that each homeowner or business does that?
It'll be part of the standard specifications of the city, and so that is
part
legally
of the permit
enforceable.
Process.
Yes.
Oh, good. Very good. Thank you.
And that makes sense, too, for the homeowner because it's easier to find it and deal with it at the moment of construction rather than being forced to go in later. So,
yep.
Dan?
I always think everybody should have to do it maybe like every 10 years or something.
It's been proposed. I don't think we're there yet with our system where we want to. We haven't required that. And there are some – it is the homeowner's asset to maintain. And so, you have to be careful how far you tread. So we don't want to get too far afield or too aggressive. But we do want people to be aware that it's there. I would imagine in a few years' time that as we've gotten farther through our work on the main, that we will consider and start looking a little bit closer at the laterals. But right now, it's not our highest priority. We know we have kind of bigger fish to fry.
Bill? Yeah, is there someone available that can do that in our laterals?
Yeah, most of the area plumbers have video inspection equipment.
Because I plan on having that cleaned anyway here, and there used to be a huge tree over there that, and the thing goes across the street to that where that tree was. So I'd like to have that checked.
They're available. Almost anybody can do it for a nominal fee is how that works.
I have a series of fiscally oriented questions. In terms of having an enterprise fund, or like you said, they should have another name for collecting it in advance, that's probably an issue that would be enjoined when the current rate increase was no longer needed for its specified purpose, and then would they maintain it to begin the forward fund rather than be faced? They probably have not enjoined that and will put off that issue.
Correct. We haven't historically in Morro Bay had a capitalization fund where we're saying that we're going to replace a half mile a year as sort of preventive maintenance. We will get there.
I think because when people are feeling the distress of this increase, that's the time, I think, potentially to say, well, here's the alternative. And then in terms of the system, both Cayucas and Morro Bay were built approximately the same time?
Yes.
And so in terms of the wastewater plant, I'm confused, probably because I just haven't paid close enough attention. Originally, there was a 60-40 split. But is the wastewater plant new construction now or upgrades, is that by that formula or by an actual flow? Which is it?
Boy, I wish I could tell you that. That is an item that, and Bruce is here tonight, and he can jump in here if I mess this up. It's hot ground. Bruce Keough is the wastewater treatment plant superintendent, I think, is Bruce's.
What we did on the last when we did the last renovation of the plant in the early 80s. Originally, the land and the plant capacity were owned 60-40. During the last JPA negotiation, and I use in quotations cautiously, the ratio for the plant capacity ownership was modified to 65-35.
Was that based on flow
anticipated
or a negotiation?
It was based on anticipated flow on it. And the negotiation, there were many issues at that time.
So the
capacity sharing provisions for the now contemplated plant have not been settled on.
So, and then is, and I'm concerned about, because I will say historically PWAB has not been involved in detail in any way in the finances, but this is a major project or collection of projects, and so I think it's something we need to discuss or at least understand. Is the Cayuga Sanitary District?
Yes.
Are they anticipating for their ratepayers an increase to refurbish? Because I assume if they were built at the same time, they'll be having the same problems. Or did they have an enterprise fund and they're not? That's why they wouldn't be increased.
They actually are increasing their rate. They've already gone through that process, and they're landing. I don't remember where they land. They're landing somewhere in the neighborhood of where we're at, if not a little bit more. So they're actually going to have a higher rate there than we are because of their anticipated share. And I don't know, I'm not privy to their finances. I don't know what cost split they use to project that. We kind of work through that, but that is out there and will need to be remedied. And I think that's one of the big things that council has out there is that we're planning to talk about the JPA and its relationship to this anticipated upgrade and the upgrade of the Main Street trunk line, which is a shared line between Morobay and Cayucas.
It brings me to my final point. In looking, and I had seen some of this before, the technical discussion about really was a presentation I didn't realize earlier relative to this subject. The reason I asked for the 60-40 versus flow is it's asserted that the flow measurements used to say how much is coming from Cayucas were misleading in the sense that they were taken at a time that combined Cayucas flow and Morro Bay flow, and it would all be interpreted to be Morro Bay flow. And if that's accurate as an assertion, would that change the cost sharing the way things are going now? Or it's an interesting observation, but really isn't going to end up, because of the way they're doing it, making any difference?
Well, I think you're looking at two separate yet related things.
Flow for the
plant.
For the pipe, you want to measure the Cayucas flow.
Right.
As I understood in this report, there was also a measurement that was intended to separate out, to identify Morro Bay flow, and at the time it was taken, it was actually the combined flows. Take me through it. And even if it were true, would it make any difference?
And where we're at with, we're looking at replacement of the upgrade of the wastewater treatment plant. They've actually installed a new flow meter that measures the Cayucas line. Cayucas has their own line. We also have a jointly owned line, and that happens to serve as our main trunk line. That's the Main Street line that we're talking about. We sort of really are very tentatively starting that process of talking to Cayucas and determining what the flows are. Ultimately, the sizing of that pipeline is not going to be based on any of our existing flows. It's going to be based on our projected flows. And so Cayucas is going through their own effort to determine what they anticipate and project those flows are going to be. Morro Bay is going through our own effort to determine what our anticipated and projected flows are going to be for that pipeline. And then when we're reasonably comfortable, both entities, that we have the right magic number, I said, you guys, you know, I talked to Cayucas and said, what I want out of you is just a number. Give me your instantaneous peak flow, and then that's going to be our design value. And we've agreed to the other parameters kind of essential for design, but we're really early in the process. And so ultimately, we're not all the way there yet. We don't know if we're for sure we're going to build a jointly owned facility. We may both decide at some point in the process it could get too hairy, and we could say, well, we're going to split and go our separate ways as far as the Main Street line is concerned. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. But ultimately, we will use their anticipated or projected flow. It's a number that they're determining and giving to us, and we will come up with our own. And so the actual measured flows in the pipeline as they sit right now, we are doing some studies to collect that data. We're looking at it, but it's more background information and constructability type issues than it will be as far as a planning number.
Well, the nature of the agreement, one, if Cayucas, if there were a split, they'd have to build their own plant.
Well, that's for the jointly owned line, not the plant.
Oh,
so we have actually three jointly owned facilities. Our outfall line that goes out into the ocean, the treatment plant, and then the Main Street line. So we have three jointly owned facilities, two of which we're looking at replacing or upgrading right now.
So, if went separate ways, it would be separate ways for which of those
for
three?
The pipe. For the Main Street
for the
trunk
main
line.
Street, so there's a separate pipe going directly.
Yes.
I think what Dylan is getting at is that in addition to the jointly owned trunk line in Main Street, the Cayuga Sanitary District has its own separate line in Main Street.
Yep.
On the west side, actually. So they're looking at capacity issues in that. We're looking at capacity issues on our share of. So you've got the ownership of the land. You've got the ownership and the rights to the capacity of the physical facility of the wastewater plant. And then you've got how you're actually operating it, the percentages. So as long as one party doesn't exceed their overall percentage, then the percentages can float and vary.
Then finally to review, are the sewer rates similar right now between the two entities?
I don't know. I think they're reasonably close, but I don't know what the rate is as of today.
Well, the reason I ask is I think that in talking with people, it's sensitive because you're asking people for more money, and then because of the joint powers fair share issues, and if they're in the ballpark and everyone's getting a rate increase, it kind of comes. Concerns.
And they have gone through the process. Yeah. They actually beat us on the rate increase. They've gone through the process and have approved a fairly substantial rate increase. I think they were more than doubling their rate.
Yeah. Roger? Or?
No, I was still just confused. Where do they measure their flow?
Their flow is measured actually in two locations. The flow coming, they measure their flow out of their lift station.
So that'd be in the Cayucas Township limit?
Yes. Yeah, and technically responsibility for measuring that flow in the JPA agreement is defined as the city of Morro Bay. We haven't always gone there and done that. They measure it. We get those numbers. And then we also have a flow meter at the influent to the plant.
Which is a combined flow.
Combined flow,
so
correct.
The thing that I had read in some of these reports was if there was infiltration out between Cayucas and Morro Bay, that we would be getting that responsibility.
And that's a fair assessment of how the flow reading is taking place right now, is that we wind up picking up the infiltration for the jointly owned line. Mm-hmm. We do own 60% of the capacity. The way that we access that is we have a certain number of turns of the valve that we allow them to open the valve under normal conditions. In an emergency and under emergency conditions, we've sort of on the fly altered the agreement and basically all done everything we can to keep all of the material in the pipelines. I don't think that will ever change. We're all pretty responsible about that. But our normal operating condition is most of that jointly owned line is, I would say, more, it's mostly used by Morro Bay, or it's our critical facility. They have another main that runs parallel to ours that they push most of their flow through. So most of their flow doesn't come into the jointly owned facility. It does go through the jointly owned line. And what we found is that the jointly owned line, they put their own line in the late 1980s, I believe. I think it was 89 when that went in. And the jointly owned line went in the 1950s. And so the jointly owned line is in worse shape. It is more subject to inflow and infiltration. That does happen within the limits of the city of Morro Bay, and Morro Bay winds up paying for all of that.
I just want to ask for, before Roger continues, after the November 13th hearing, do you anticipate this will be coming back to the board?
Well, I don't think that the rates will come back. We certainly can bring back our, as part of the sanitary sewer management plan that the state is requiring us to prepare, we're going to have to bring back almost every detail of our operations through this board.
And the reason I ask is we're fast approaching 8, and it's clear there's enough substantive discussion to go beyond that. So they're and take it away to the end.
Thank you. I'll be brief. First of all, I'm very, very pleased. This is finally before us, and I think you've done a very fine job in presenting it. I also want to take a moment and applaud two citizens who came before us earlier, Richard Sadowski and Mary Jo Bouton, who have spent a lot of their own time and money assisting, I would assume, and going through some of the problems that face us today because of the lack of attention earlier. For instance, the 10 years, as you said. And I really do applaud them. I think they've done all of us a great service in bringing it to our attention at the continued number of meetings they have appeared, alerting us to the problems. And the fact that staff has picked up on it, if it hadn't already, and we're now doing something. We're being proactive. So I applaud all of you, and I thank you for this report. And I hope that we can get to it before it truly does become a major disaster. So keep up the good work, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, we finished our master planning process in 2006. And the way that capital project...
Keep the public informed at all times and in every sequence of actions we take place in regards to our sewer and wastewater treatment. Will that continue? And do we have a program of allowing the people to become informed? I mean, it's nice of us to have this meeting here, and hopefully some will see it. But
well, as Dylan said, we're gonna bring the individual chapters of the management plan here. As you may have, you received at least one, if not two, copies of our the water and wastewater news. That's a quarterly document that we're reinstituting. We used to do the Public Works newsletter quarterly, and now we've pared that down to have half of it water, half of it wastewater. We intend to do that on a quarterly basis, continue putting that in all the water bills, as well as doing the direct mails to all the to every mail recipient in the community.
Thank you, Bill.
The next future agenda items, and the future agenda items for next meeting are tentatively is the presentation and the use of the recycling guide in the phone book, depending on arrangements. Definitely the urban water management plan, and an item, the wording may change, the Caltrans Highway 1 Corridor Enhancement Program as a public hearing discussion.
Do you want to take formal action to change the meeting or do it by, kind of done it by consensus?
In terms of setting the next meeting, someone move. In a joint motion to set the next meeting at November 14th and to adjourn this one.
Well, before we adjourn, we have a future agenda item. I thought we were talking under future agenda.
Oh,
I will make a motion that we have the next meeting November 14th.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
future agenda. I still want to know what we as a board are going to do about the urban forest management plan. We need some direction from City Council. You're sending a letter. They're going to get it. I think it's time that we form a subcommittee, preferably Noah and myself, since we originated it, and get together with Rob Livick and finalize what is a city tree, when does a tree become a city tree or not become a city tree. It's a continuation of the ongoing urban forest management plan.
What we did is forgot to pursue that during the agenda grid.
We're going to put it down for January,
don't we? I will get the letter off, and why don't, if we get a response in some form, why don't...
I'm just looking for direction, that's all.
It could go as long as January if we don't have a December meeting, but why don't we put it on, even though we may bump it, for December to status of...
That's perfect
that
for me.
And that way we should be hearing, so that'll be for December.
If we don't have a meeting, January is fine, but no later than January, please.
We don't usually, we've often not had a December meeting. We could move it forward.
Yeah, we'll see, and we'll decide that in November.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then I'll hold off getting together with Rob Livick on the... status of what a city tree is until we get direction from City Council? Is that...
That's historically been the process.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill. That's all I needed was the process. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, to entertain a motion to adjourn.
Oh, by all means, let's do that.
All in favor?
Aye.
No.